Welcome to Nightlife.
You're on ABC Radio. I'm Melanie Tate. It's great to be with you tonight, and I'm so excited to introduce you to my next guest. Pamela Clark is a Women's Weekly legend, responsible for their very popular children's birthday cake book published in 1980, which my family has been eating from for how many? 38 years now. She's been associated with the Women's Weekly Test Kitchen for nearly 50 years. Imagine how many recipes that is. Pamela has had such an incredible career. She was poached from the St. George County Council to develop recipes for Women's Weekly, and she's experienced all the food trends you could possibly imagine since then, from vanilla slice to apple pie to Freehans and mud cake. Not only that, she was there for the Kerry Packer years, the Ida Buttrose years, the Deb Hutton years, and more. And it's not just the test kitchen she's experienced on a grander scale. It's the social, cultural, and economic changes experienced by women over the last 50 years. Pamela's new book is called Memories and Recipes from the Test Kitchen. And Pamela joins us tonight. Welcome to Nightlife, Pamela.
Thank you, Mel.
Can you tell us about your earliest memory of food growing up in Vanuatu?
Yes, I remember so well the taste of coconuts, coconut milk, the lovely marshmallowy stuff that comes out of the immature coconut, and lobster, which were really common over there, and of course the fruit, the pawpaws, the mangoes, you know, just sublime.
And were you already being creative with it at that stage as a child?
Not particularly. My mother didn't encourage me to cook much because I was messy.
Right.
And I get that. But she was a very good cook, so I was always watching her. Mm-hmm. And Nana, her mother, and indeed my great-grandmother. So I was pretty heavily influenced by those three. Mm-hmm. And then I went to school and was even more influenced when I got into high school, and I did home ec, and, you know, my teacher was just fabulous, and off I went, really.
Can I just go back for a second to your mum and Nana and great-grandmother? Did the three of them have a specialty that they passed down through the generations, you know, something that...
The thing I remember about Grandma, that is the great-grandmother, were her scones, and her making them on a great big wooden table in the kitchen and cooking them on I think it was a wood-fired oven in Gladesville, for goodness sake, in Sydney. I remember that so clearly. Nana was more of a savoury cook, although she made stunning omelettes and soufflés, which wasn't that common back then. I was lucky I knew about that. Mum was apple pie, fruitcake, really good meals. She even did curries, you know, when people didn't do them that much. So she was quite adventurous. She read a lot of magazines and kept up with what was going on.
So a lot of people who are great at home ec might not know that necessarily that it's a career to be had, might sort of take those skills back to the home or the like. What was it about food and maybe even the great teacher you had that led you into a professional career in food?
I'd say it was probably the school teacher, Miss Scott was her name, and she had been a cooking demonstrator and teacher, and she was even playing with television back in those early years. And she worked for the gas company, and I was very influenced by her. She also did cake decorating, so I took up cake decorating. and so it went on. But I really admired her, and she was a terrific teacher, even though she'd never been to teacher's college. I went to a private school, and there she was, and it was a fabulous introduction to food for me.
How do you make that introduction go into a professional life?
Well, when I first left school, I went to the gas company. I didn't last there very long. They didn't like me. And so I guess I would have been fired, but my mother said to me, and I don't think I've told too many people this, my mother said to me, well, you've got to resign, you know, in case if you feel this way, you've got to resign. And I was a very green 17-year-old, incredibly green. So I wrote this resignation and handed it in, and off I went. Then I got a job at St. George County Council, which was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And the boss there, we just got on, was terrific. And she was a wonderful baker and cake decorator. And that's really where my passion for baking was really cemented.
How did you come to be at the Australian Women's Weekly?
Well, I was poached from there. by a mutual friend of a whole bunch of foodies. She worked with me at the Royal Easter Show. She was at Prospect County Council. She then ended up at the Weekly and phoned me one day and said, "There's a job going in charge of the test kitchen. I think you'd love it. What do you think?" So I said, "Okay." So went in for the interview with Ellen Sinclair, and I stayed, really.
At that stage, you know, Women's Weekly is such an icon within our country. You know, it's something we all grow up reading. We can all remember a particular story or a particular cover or a particular cake, for example.
Yes.
Was it the institution that it was then?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Perhaps even more so. I mean, there was a weekly at home all of the time, and that was the case in most households in middle Australia. And it was what we read. I mean, Mum read it religiously every week.
Yeah.
And so did I.
So what was the workload like when you first got there?
Well, we thought we were really busy, but of course, compared to today, we weren't.
And what did you have to file a recipe per week or?
Well, we did. Since it was a weekly, it was quite taxing because we had about 40 recipes to get into the weekly a week. So there was a team.
40 recipes?
Mm, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But not everyone was photographed. And that was the big change I made when I became boss lady in 84.
So I just can't get over that. 40 recipes a week. What kind of a team did you have to put that together?
There were about 8 of us. And so it was a cookathon. You were cooking, you were testing, you were triple testing, you were preparing food for photography. And that still goes on today. Mm-hmm. The big difference today is that everything is still being photographed.
Right.
We don't put recipes in without a picture.
Right. So in those early days, you know, the you will have seen the media sort of diminish over the years to smaller and smaller numbers. Mm. What was it like, the culture of the place when you first started compared to what it's like today?
Very buzzy. A lot more people. Now it's trimmed down to, you know, a skeleton staff really. And that's everywhere. It's not just publishing. But it was very buzzy. The building in Park Street ran through from Castlereagh to Elizabeth as well. And back in those days, they did the telegraph as well.
Right.
So it was a 24-hour building, 24/7. Mm-hmm. So there were trucks going and the printing was done in the building. And you walked in and you could smell that very unusual smell of printer's ink, you know, coming up from the two basements where there's a health club now. So it was quite different, but very exciting.
So you worked with some of the icons of the Australian media scene, and you're quite a fan of Kerry Packer. Can you tell us a bit about your experience of Kerry Packer as boss?
Oh, look, he was wonderful. He was really wonderful. And I got quite involved with the family, with Mrs. Packer and Gretel and James. And it was a privilege to work for them, really. He was a wonderful boss. I ran his dining room as well as looking after the test kitchen.
At the office?
Or? Yeah. In the building, building. So that was pretty special. And sometimes we'd have advertising lunches booked for the dining room, and then if KP wanted the dining room, they were kicked out. Right.
And what kind of food did KP like to eat?
Very simple foods. He's a very big fan of the pie.
Right.
And so he liked a particular breed of pie, so he bought the company. And
as you do.
As you do. So there was always a stock of these pies in the freezer that he really, really loved.
Wow. So it's not like he got you to home make some beautiful pie. It was like a particular type of pie.
He liked pink iced sponges, cupcakes, finger buns. I don't know why he liked the pink icing, but it was part of what we did.
Yeah. What happens to the food that is made for the photos? I mean, is it that you'd have a great cake and take it up to Kerry Packer after you'd shot it?
No. He didn't like that. He only liked his special things with the pink icing. Well, There's quite a few people who taste the food, so really there's not much left over. And if there is some left over, people take it home. We don't want to see food wasted, whether it's from first testing, second testing, or indeed photography. We don't cheat at photography. Everything's edible.
Yeah. Wow. What a great gig. How do you manage to stay so trim, Pamela?
I'm not trim.
You look trim from where I'm sitting. My goodness me. If I worked in that job, I wouldn't be able to get through that door.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy. But we deal in teaspoonfuls, but they soon mount up, particularly if it's really yummy and you really like it. You'll have more than one teaspoonful.
So for many years, the real food editor wasn't revealed until the 1970s, and you had a fictitious food editor called Layla Howard. Why was this the case?
I don't know, and no one knows. It was Leela C. Howard. Then they dropped the C and
right.
She became Leela Howard. But really, in my time, it was Ellen Sinclair who was the food editor, and it was Ida Buttrose who said, "What's this nonsense about this Leela Howard person? Who is she? Get rid of her." You know, she was immediately dropped from the byline. That was it. And Mrs. S. got the food editor role that she thoroughly deserved.
If you've just tuned in, we're hearing from Cooking and Women's Weekly legend Pamela Clark. Pamela, of course, over the last couple of years has been in and out of the news as she's been, not that she was ever in hiding, but unmasked as the creator of the Women's Weekly birthday cake book, which is so beloved over many generations of Australian children. Now, Pamela, I know you've talked a lot about the birthday cake book, but if you don't mind, can I just ask a couple of questions?
Of course.
Huge fan of those cakes. How did it come about? How did it sort of have its genesis?
Well, we had done quite a few cakes, not that many, in the weekly, in the magazine itself. And we were looking around for a new title to come out in 1980, and we were well planned into the future because the four books before the kids' birthday cake book were very successful. So I said, why don't we do kids' birthday cakes? And there was a bit of resistance from my boss and higher up. And they said, oh, we're not sure it would sell. And, you know, so I was very pushy about it and came up with ideas with the team because everyone was keen about it in the kitchen. So we came up with ideas and we'd say, look, you know, we've got a bit of time. Let's make this. And we'd make it on the bench. And then Mrs. S. would come into the kitchen and say, oh, I like this. Yes. And so, well, let's shoot it, little darling. We're all little darlings. And so we'd drag in a photographer with some lights, and they reluctantly, because they would much rather have it set up in the studio. So, but no, they were dragged into the kitchen and with their lights and their cameras and their tripods and whatever, and take a very basic happy snap of that cake. And you can see that in the book that there's no tarting up, there's no food styling. They were on the bench. And we in the test kitchen regarded them as a test run, a prototype, if you like. But no, they're in the book, which has become part of its charm, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to backtrack a second. You were saying before that you were quite involved with the Packers and with Gretel and James.
Mm.
As they were growing up, did they have any of these Women's Weekly birthday cakes?
We did. I made a couple of cakes. I can't remember. I think it was for Gretel and some of the grandchildren of Kerry and Ros Packer. I made cakes for. I think I made a christening cake for one of them. But it's lost in the mists of time.
Right, so not the piano cake or the
no,
pool cake.
No.
Or Donald Duck.
No.
So what do you – if we go back to 1980 and we look at this book now, it is so legendary that, and I was saying to you as we came in, that it's so legendary in our family that my auntie, after my nephew was born, handed hers down to me. It was kind of almost ceremonial, you know, because she had made all of them for us. We're four kids and that's a lot of birthdays, you know, up until you're 10 or 12 years old. My personal favourite is the piano. Thank you for that one.
That was mine.
It's wonderful. Given that they're so important to Australian families, was that the case straight away? I mean, was this something that connected with people straight away?
No. In fact, we were very disappointed that it didn't sell nearly as well as the four books before it. And it was selling extremely well in the UK, and in Canada too, and in New Zealand as well. But Australia was just dragging, you know. So I was disappointed, and then I rationalised that by thinking, well, you know, birthdays come but once a year, and maybe the mothers are waiting till it's the birthday time before mm-hmm. they buy a book. I was being optimistic here. So that went on for a few years, and I felt really responsible. But then it started to pick up, mm-hmm. and they reprinted now many, many, many times, and it's back in print as a vintage edition. We did have to remove 5 cakes from it because of copyright issues that didn't exist when we did the recipes.
Oh, as in, you know, Disney
Donald,
and
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Disney and Hanna-Barbera. And we even tried to buy the rights to those cakes, but no, definitely not.
Aren't they silly, you know?
Well, I think so, yeah.
To not, because it's such a part. I remember my friend, the journalist Ginger Gorman,
yes.
who did a story about you a few years ago. It was her 40th birthday, and she said she really became maybe it wasn't her 40th, one of her birthdays, or somebody's 40th birthday, and they came in with an Australian Women's Weekly cake, and the whole room erupted. And Ginger's husband is actually from the Philippines, and he didn't get it. He didn't know what everybody was going so crazy for. And it was that moment she realised this is a huge cultural thing within
yes.
And I wonder what sort of reaction do people have when they discover that you're the person behind that book?
Well, I don't know what they thought before. I mean, I often wonder why people. I don't know what they think. Maybe they think that you pull open a drawer and the recipes and photos magically appear. Mm. But most people were stunned that indeed there was a test kitchen in the middle of the city, in the middle of the CBD, if you like. So it was all a bit peculiar when it came to cakes in particular, but they accepted it, I suppose.
How does it feel for you knowing that you've been part of so many of the formative growing up at times of young Australian people, not young Australian people even, but I'm nearly 40. I'm not young, and you're very much part of my life.
You are young. Yeah. It's very interesting. A few years ago, I was asked to come and judge the cakes in Canberra. They there's a charity called Pansy. Anyway, they got locals to make every cake in that book and put them on show, and I was invited down to judge it as one of the judges. The other couple of judges didn't turn up or something. So I ended up judging all of them, the whole 106 of them. And it was held in the Hilton, I think, hotel. They had to lock the doors to keep the public out.
Wow.
Because of fire restrictions. There were so many people. They were queued as far as the eye could see, and they came along with their books, often with pages stuck together with icing and stuff, for me to sign. It was very humbling.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. And it's reaching 3 generations of
yeah.
people now. It's amazing.
It's wonderful. thank you again. Pamela Clark is with us. Pamela is talking about her new book, which is called, it's from the Women's Weekly. It's called Memories and Recipes from the Test Kitchen. And Pamela is, of course, the creator of pretty much the world's most famous birthday cake book, the Women's Weekly birthday cake book. Pamela, can we go to your other, because of course you've got this vast world outside of the birthday cake books as well of food. What have been over all these years at the Women's Weekly, are there perennials that you go back to year after year that people keep wanting to know the recipe of how to make eggs?
Would you believe pavlova?
Really?
Yes. And more recently, chocolate mm-hmm. mud cakes.
Right.
They are the two most requested recipes.
Mm-hmm. And how do you, what is the key to a really special pavlova?
Dissolving the sugar. It's as simple as that. And whipping the egg whites properly.
Right.
Know. Yeah.
And is it a simple thing to make once
yes.
you've got those things down?
Yes.
What have been some of the more peculiar food trends that you've seen over the years?
Peculiar? I can't think of anything peculiar. What's peculiar about food, Mel? Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. What that would be. what about, I'm just trying to think of what would be, I mean, what have been the trends that you've, I mean, do trends tend to be cyclical? Like,
Restaurants lead
right.
with different cuisines. There's uh-huh. no doubt about that. And as soon as we notice that, say, the big example is Thai, and that goes quite a way back now. Mm. And when Thai hit the restaurant trade, we were very interested, very excited. I mean, we loved Asian food anyway. And we all trotted off to various restaurants wherever, whenever we could, and ate the food and came back and tried to replicate it in the kitchen, which is what the general way that we handle different cuisines. And we ended up doing a Thai book, and it didn't work. We peaked too early, as they say. And a couple of years on, we did another one, and by then the Thai sauces and condiments and everything were in the supermarket, and that seems to be the key to when the cuisine actually works for us at that middle commercial level.
So when people can find the bits and pieces out in the supermarket.
Yes, they don't have to go to really special shops. You know, they've reached the general market, and then we had success.
Of course, over these years too, the internet has come in, and now when you want to make a pavlova, you can Google pavlova and put in. What kind of a difference has that made to the day-to-day running of your kitchen and to the recipes in the Women's Weekly?
It's made a difference insofar as people don't phone us anymore.
Because they used to phone.
Oh, yes. Phones ran hot. Mm-hmm. They never stopped. And we'd be answering all kinds of questions. And you became quite special in some areas. So if it was someone talking about, let's say, freezing things, we'd go to one girl. I got all the baking questions. And then other people had, you know, phenomenal memories of where recipes were. So each person had their role to play with the phone calls. But that's not happening anymore because, I believe, because of the internet, people just access the recipes. Mm-hmm. The other response is, we don't know which one to make, you know, because there are so many variations on a recipe. And they'll say, you know, we tried the internet but the recipe didn't work because maybe it hadn't been tested three times. So that's good for us. But it's certainly made a difference.
And over such a long career, do you have a recipe that you're most proud of or a recipe you most like to cook?
I've become known as the fruitcake queen, and I've made up a lot of fruitcakes in my time. Probably the most famous one is the Grand Marnier fruitcake, which I made up for the Grand Marnier people. Mrs. S had been out to a lunch and she came back and said, I've just been treated to this amazing lunch by the Grand Marnier people and they want us to use Grand Marnier as an ingredient, a lot of it, not just a tablespoon or two in a dessert. What do you think? I said, give me a minute, I'll think. Made up a fruitcake recipe with half a cup of Grand Marnier in it, which is a lot, on paper, flew into the kitchen, made it, waited till the next day till it was barely cold, cut it, and it was divine.
Oh.
It was just one of those lucky moments where I got it right. And because you don't always, but mostly you do. So I made the cake, and then they wanted the recipe in a couple of days. So that's why there was the rush on. So I did that, and it was accepted. And Mrs. S got a beautiful bottle of some vintage Grand Marnier sent to her from France. And she said to me, I really should give you this, shouldn't I? I said, well, that'd be nice, but she didn't.
And bottles and bottles and bottles of Grand Marnier were probably sold as a result of this.
Yeah, and so it is a beautiful cake, and it's the cake that I made for my son's wedding, you know, and special people I'll bother to make it for because it's a bit of fooling about, you know.
Can you still enjoy cooking when it's your job and at such an intense level as this? I mean, do you still enjoy it today?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I really do. I particularly like the baking side, but, you know, I can't really afford to bake cakes to eat myself because I'm 10 to chubby.
You're not from where I'm sitting. Do you know what? It's so bizarre because cooking it. Can I just ask about baking though before I let you go? As somebody with an extreme talent for baking, how do you, you know, baking? I find I'm a decent cook but a terrible baker, and I've been told it's because it's very scientific, the measurements. And
it is.
How are you creative within that? How can you be so creative and not when you're so creative as a baker, how do you do that and not make everything like a rock or not?
Well, after a bit of experience, you make a cake, say, any cake from any recipe, and you look at it and you think to yourself, I can make this better. Because you know stuff, you know, if I added a little bit more sugar or decreased the flour or added more butter or took away an egg, there's all sorts of factors involved. And then you're virtually creating another recipe. You change the texture of the cake. You can change the height of it. You can change the whole look of it. Mm-hmm. Just by changing one or two or even three ingredients. Just, you've got to creep up on it, though, when you do stuff like that.
Well, Pamela, it has been such a delight chatting with you tonight. Thank you so much and congratulations on the new book.
Thank you, Mel. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.